You're listening to WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
Check, check, one, two. Broke like a little country. Rock and roll and blues. Cause we sure love playing. The good people like you. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, one, two.
Welcome to Music Local and Sustainable, the radio show that features discussions with and the music of local musicians. I am your host, Dave Lake. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I'm talking with pianist Nicole Brancato, who will be performing in a couple of weeks on Thursday, November 13th, at 7:30 p.m. as part of the Georgia Southern University Piano in the Arts series at the Fine Arts Auditorium of the Armstrong campus of Georgia Southern University. Welcome to Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, Nicole Brancato.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's get to know Nicole Brancato. Tell me your musical journey.
You know, honestly, it started right in Savannah, Georgia. I was born and raised in Savannah, and I went to the Savannah Arts Academy. This has been quite a bit of years, but Savannah has always held a special place in my heart, and it was really and truly the beginning of my musical journey, especially attending Savannah Arts Academy as a piano major. For my undergraduate, I went to Georgia State in Atlanta, really loved my time in Atlanta, and then went to New York afterwards for two different graduate degrees, one in classical piano and the other in contemporary piano at Manhattan School of Music and at the City University of New York. And, you know, honestly, from there, I've been in New York for about 15 years and have always really loved it. I think it's been a big inspiration and motivator for a lot of the kinds of projects and the work that I do. I like to joke around and say in New York, there's really an audience for everything and every kind of project. So it's really a joy to get to like tinker and experiment and see, you know, where the muses take me.
Before you went to the Arts Academy, I presume you took private lessons?
I did for quite a number of years. I started when I was, I think, four. My mom tells the story, and my older brother, who's 2 years my senior, had started piano first, and I believe he was five at the time, and maybe I was three, and I just loved hearing him play the piano, and I would come, you know, try to crawl up on the bench and hear him play, and I'd want to play with him too. And then a few months went by like that, and my mom said, okay, you know, it's time for you to get lessons too. So I think she looked into getting me a teacher as well, and so then I started. But you know, to be really honest, I think it was quite a number of years for me until kind of the light bulb went off for myself. Gosh, from when I was four until probably 11 or 12, let's say, I enjoyed the piano, I enjoyed music, but it was kind of part of this, the everyday tapestry of life. It was something that I did. I remember my parents putting on the oven timer, like, you gotta practice, you gotta do this, you know? And I say, oh, the timer. But I remember the moment when I was in maybe seventh grade, and I was practicing scales. Like, it wasn't even something, you know, incredibly profound music, but suddenly I heard the sounds differently. And I thought about each individual note, even of just a scale, as maybe a little word or phrase. And so I saw this expressive potential suddenly open up in front of me. And it was really just this perspective shift that happened. And I thought, like, oh, there's really something here. There is an avenue for expression that is different than words and writing. It's different than visual art. And that was a really important moment, I think, for me.
What did your studies at the Arts Academy with a piano major add to what you're already learning as a private piano student?
That's a really good question. probably one of the biggest motivators from my time at the Savannah Arts Academy was that there was an annual piano recital that you had to audition for. So you had to, you know, present something, you had to be ready, and of course the faculty would decide who got to play based on their preparedness and their repertoire and English sort of this and that. And so having that environment that on one hand was really uplifting and motivating, but it was also competitive. You know, you had a lot of people around you suddenly that other people are auditioning for this too. And oh, what are they playing? They sound great. You know, you're kind of put into this environment that really pushes you to excel. And as a pianist, not being in orchestra, not being in bands and things like that, you know, it really, as a young person, can be kind of isolating. Of course, you do competitions and, you know, you do things like that. You do your, let's say, your annual recital in your private piano studio, but you don't quite see what's out there in the same way as maybe if you're a trumpet player and you play in a wind ensemble, or you play in a brass band, or if you're a string player and you play in your school orchestra. You know, you kind of have a sense of a group, of a larger entity than just yourself. So that was a huge motivator. And then beyond that, I actually got to participate in things like the choir, and I accompanied the choir. Oh man, that was some of my first experiences accompanying, and it was very humbling. I still remember those days. It was quite a learning experience doing that. And also joining the Skylight Jazz Band, that was also a really wonderful experience. It was my first exposure to jazz and improvisation. And that became also a really important thing in my life. Improvisation took this entirely new trajectory for me.
And as a piano student at the high school level or before that, my presumption is that the works that you were performing were the classics, the Brahms, the Beethoven, the Bach. Were you ever exposed at that early age to contemporary music?
You know, not a whole lot, to be honest. A little bit here and there. I remember hearing in high school in particular, let's say, music by Kachaturian. And that, for me, in those days, that was very like, oh, what's this? This is quite new and different. You know, if I could go back and talk to my younger self now, like, what a difference it would be. But no, I mean, really, as a young person, was really focusing on the canonical pieces. So the Bachs, the Beethovens, the Brahms, and all the way through graduate school, really, I was playing a lot of the canon. And there was gateway composer. And I suppose he's a gateway for many people in certain ways, but I got really obsessed with the music of Debussy in my first year of my master's degree. And I just started churning through the music of Debussy. Going, you know, I would concertize often with the complete sets of preludes, and I sort of couldn't get enough of it. And I always felt like Debussy's music was the beginning of something new. And of course, historically, you can really say a lot about, you know, the point in time, of course, that Debussy was live and created music, and his use of texture and harmony and sometimes extra musical ideas that would make their way into his pieces. But that was a really important moment in my life as a musician that made me look more and more into contemporary music, into music of the 20th century. And, you know, just from there, it sort of snowballed. I started composing, I would say, as young as high school, but it was all really for myself. I used to compose and I used to arrange. When I first moved to New York, I had a big band that I used to do arrangements for, and we had a monthly residency at that time was the Ace Hotel, and we did some performances at the Cutting Room and just, you know, different places around town. It was so much fun. But even then, I didn't call myself a composer, and I think it took time for me to see myself that way. It was kind of another one of those perspective shifts where one day I said, hi, you know, I am I'm writing quite a bit of music, and I'm doing all this arranging, but I've never thought about myself as a composer, and what's up with that? And I sort of had this reckoning with myself, and I remember the first time I introduced myself as I'm a pianist and a composer, and it felt kind of weird. I thought, oh, this is strange. I can't believe that came out of my mouth. But over time, I came more and more to terms with that. And so now I feel like I can sit a lot more comfortably between these two ideas. I am both a pianist and a composer.
So you moved to New York.
Yes.
And started your master's degree. And the first master's degree was in piano performance?
Was in, yes, classical piano performance at Hunter College, part of the City University of New York. And that was such a marvelous experience. I really enjoyed my time there quite a lot. You know, but I was having this, let's say, dual-natured aspect of my musicianship popping up because, like I said, I moved and I was working with this big band and I was experiencing New York and seeing musically what it had to offer. And I just started discovering all of these things, which were really amazing and different, you know, like in different parts of Brooklyn and different parts of New York. And I thought, like, wow, people are so creative. And people are doing so many things artistically. You have musicians working with artists and doing, you know, who knows what and who knows where. And so there was this push and pull, I felt, well, where, wow, I'm so attached to the piano and I've done this for so long and it's such a part of me and how I express myself. And here's all this repertoire that is beloved to me. And also here's all this new stuff that I've been exposed to. And, you know, how do I fit these things together?
And then you went on to a second master's degree.
I did, at the Manhattan School of Music. I should say contemporary performance practice, and my instrument within that degree was the piano. And that is a really special program. And that, I think, was sort of the culmination of me bringing these different worlds that I had within me together. I worked with fabulous pianists who specialize in contemporary music, but also many other kinds of instrumentalists and the gamut, sort of everything in between. So it really exposed me to a wide array of what contemporary music can be. And it helped me to sort of better understand where I fit into the context of this really sort of amorphous field.
So it was really contemporary classical music that the emphasis was on, so that you did contemporary composers and contemporary techniques.
Yes, very much so. So I did a lot of study in the playing of what I like to call the harp of the piano. And of course, if you, for those listening, if you imagine the inside of a grand piano that looks a little bit like the shape of the harp, the high strings are quite small, and as you get toward the bottom, they expand out. There's a whole separate instrument, in a way, that has been inside of the piano the whole time. So I spent a lot of time working on prepared piano, so things a la John Cage, putting things between the strings and seeing what kind of fun and miraculous sounds you could derive from there. And then playing on the strings a bit like Henry Cowell, so strumming the strings, getting these beautiful guitar-like sounds out of it. And then things that are even a little bit more modern, so using electromagnetic resonators like an Ebow, you can put those on the strings and create these beautiful sine tone type sounds. And from there, experimenting with sounds beyond, let's say, what people might have already done. Coming out of grad school, I had a collaboration with a really fabulous visual artist named Douglas Paulson. And he's a socially engaged artist. He's a sculptor. He was, at the time, director of education at Socrates Sculpture Park, and he's also on faculty at the New School. And we developed this project together called Soundfulness, which really lovingly started around what we say with care as a trash piano, which was an instrument that was being discarded, that was being, you know, sent out to the trash. It was a grand piano. It wasn't really playable. But we got some grant funds, and we were really happy to partner with some local institutions in New York to create a sound installation that was durational. It lasted about a year long. And we had this instrument that was outside for the public to engage with that we had intervened within. We had created all sorts of different little preparations amongst the strings. We put different electronics on the soundboard, one of which was a transducer, so you could play field recordings from the surrounding neighborhood through the instrument. So you could hear the neighborhood talking to you through the instrument. So the public could come up and play and discover and say, oh, what does this key do? And, you know, to have fun, that childlike curiosity with the instrument. And periodically we'd have concerts on the instrument, a little bit as an experiment to see what it would sound like. And it was such a marvelous project. The sounds that you could make with this thing were absolutely beautiful. You could not do any of those things to a well-conditioned piano. You know, a piano technician would shoot you, say, get away from my instrument. But it was the perfect opportunity to experiment and to see, you know, what the possibilities were. And we had, I think, 4 concerts, one for each season throughout the year on the instrument. And my favorite was the winter concert. Of course, winters in New York are cold. And I remember we showed up, you know, it was outside too. So, you know, I thought like, oh gosh, what have I gotten myself into? What are we doing here? An audience is going to show up soon and I have to play this thing. And the keys are frozen. And I looked at it and I went, oh gosh. And I pressed my fingers on them quite hard and started cracking the ice. And they still played. And it was just this really beautiful moment. It sounded great. I thought, my gosh, this thing is indestructible, actually. Covered in ice and it still makes sound.
And you have a album, Listening Sessions, Winter Soundfulness.
Yes. In fact, that was recorded at that very concert. It was at Culture Lab LIC. That's where the exhibition was. And that album was recorded live at that concert.
Is there any particular track from that album that you think reflects either soundfulness or specifically the winter soundfulness?
You know, that is a really good question. For the winter album specifically, it's all a little bit attacca. So it would be hard for me to pick one specifically, but I suppose speaking toward the project itself and what maybe speaks most loudly to what that soundfulness collaboration was, I'd actually have to say that we have another album. It's called Listening Sessions Summer, and it's on Bandcamp. Our other one is on streaming platforms, but I believe Summer is just on Bandcamp. And the first track is called When You Even Think of Somebody You Love. And that one is sort of the epitome of what this collaboration is about. It features this really beautiful field recording of a young woman going on a walk through Socrates Sculpture Park. And she is talking about the things that she's seen and then diverging into musings on life. And they're really so touching and really beautiful. And it's a little bit of this energy that I feel like we all need a little bit right now. It's very uplifting and hopeful.
When you call somebody, when you even think of somebody, you automatically feel rewarded that you've gotten to know them. Because everyone needs somebody, and sometimes the phone isn't going to really say I love you. I mean, you could say I love you, Siri, and Siri will say it back, but we all know Siri's not the best at this. But one thing is, friends are, family, so may be it, whoever you love, you can love freely, you can love openly. And one thing I hope for this future is that
it's on,
that we come to a point. empowered and less antisocial, because to be honest, I see a lot of distractions, and distractions are a way to kind of throw you off course, because maybe you're going down a darker path, or maybe you're just worrying about the past.
Thank you.
And that became the sort of skeleton for performance that we did at Socrates Sculpture Park for one of the first pieces that we performed there.
And you have solo performances on an album, and those are the Fleeting Moments of the Infinity Loop 1 and 2.
Yes, thank you for mentioning those. Those are, it's a mix of solo compositions and improvisations, but they're really leaning toward the improvisational side of things. And those were a little bit of an experiment. You know, I challenged myself one day to say, if I did a new improvisation every day, what could I come up with? And I did that over the course of a year. And, you know, told myself it really has to be something new every single day. And I recorded it. And then I would listen back and, you know, just try to be really open-minded and think about the ideas that I used. And I thought, huh, you know, that's a very interesting idea here. And over time, you almost start to build a repertoire of musical ideas through improvisation. But I was listening back and I thought, oh, wow, you hear a moment and you say, I was really onto something here. And over time, you get to hear it almost like a diary. There's this journal of your former self expressing, when you're really hitting it right, you're expressing that moment in its purity. You know, you're in this flow state and you're being really true to that moment in time. And so I was listening to it and I was really moved by some of those expressions. I thought these would make a really wonderful album. They feature extended techniques. They feature your ordinary piano playing too. And there's a little bit of electronics in there.
Thank you.
I started working with electronics during my time at the Manhattan School of Music, and I kind of surprised myself with how much I enjoyed working with the sampled sound, with field recordings, and even building out my own instruments in the context of synthesizers. And so I always, now going forward in my own career, I often try to incorporate a little bit of that because I just find it quite fun.
This is WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.
You're listening to WRUU, your local radio station, for people just like you, hosted by people from your community. The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and others from the Savannah and Lowcountry area. In other words, WRUU is your community radio station. Please help us by donating whatever you can to help your neighbors and friends stay on the air. Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station. Any amount is welcomed. Thank you for your support of WRUU.
Welcome back to Music Local and Sustainable, and I'm your host, Dave Lake. Bach Ascending presents Moonflower, a Robert Hicks Memorial Concert, on Sunday, November 23rd at 4 p.m. in the Lutheran Church of the Ascension Sanctuary. This concert features Deborah Cheryl Ward, horn, Anastasia Petrunia, violin, and Harant Bagrasian, piano, performing works by Brahms, Bach, and a new commission by composer Kate Kalindo, entitled Moonflower. More information can be found at bachascending.com. Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I'm talking with pianist Nicole Brancato, who will be performing in a couple of weeks on Thursday, November 13th at 7:30 p.m. as part of the Georgia Southern University Piano in the Arts series at the Fine Arts Auditorium of the Armstrong campus of Georgia Southern University. And you are in a duo. Duo extempore?
Yes. There's nothing more fun than being really, really in sync with someone while you're improvising. And that's really what that duo in particular is about. It's a project I have with a bassist named Evan Jagels, who's also based in New York. And the project started as a way of creating site-specific concert curations. And so we would work with particular institutions. One was the Roosevelt House and Museum in New York City. One was Hyde Hall in upstate New York. We've done different projects at universities. One was the University of Southern Mississippi. And we would create a concert from scratch that told the history of the space or told a particular story that was connected with the space. So at the Roosevelt House, it was for the 90th anniversary of the New Deal. And that concert had this surprise bit of research. I always think about this in the context of working with Evan. It turns out that, okay, there are a lot of webs, so go with me for a moment. The Roosevelts were actually quite close to the Gershwins. And for quite a number of years in the Roosevelt House on the Upper East Side in New York, there was a Gershwin piano in the house. And, you know, we did quite a bit of research and we found out that the historians of the Roosevelt House, in fact, they weren't aware of this connection. And it actually came through music historians and musicologists who knew that there was this connection to the Roosevelts. And so that became a really grounding force of that concert curation, was this connection to Gershwin. And so we wrote quite a bit of music that went through the history of the house a bit, but was all centered around this connection to the piano. And of course, as a pianist, I thought, this is the best. There's this Gershwin piano that was here. And that was quite a bit of fun. But we have an album as well that we came out with, I want to say, about a year ago. It's called Ordinary Places. And that album also uses field recordings. And our idea was to capture sound of, well, ordinary everyday places and to use music to elevate them to a really special, beautiful thing. But because, of course, these rituals that we have in our lives, even though they're ordinary, they can also be quite beautiful and extraordinary. So we captured outdoor sounds, the sounds of the parks, of the rain, of things like that, and also commuting sounds. I really loved capturing the subway, and that was on our album. That is a really cantankerous and energetic piece, of course, mimicking the energy and all the characters that you get on the subway.
Thank you. Thank you.
We have one that's for the coffee shop because both of us really love coffee. That was very important to us that one of the pieces be centered around coffee. And so that's a bit of the energy of the album, finding the extraordinary in moments that are ordinary.
Well, and now you're going to be performing here as part of the Piano in the Arts series. And what sort of pieces are you going to play? And Are they going to let you prepare the piano?
That's a great question. I am very excited to present a continuation of a project that actually premiered in New York at the Bonnet's Garden Immersive, which was an immersive experience of the paintings of Monet. And this program is called Playing with Words. And it's a little bit, honestly, of a lot of the things that we've talked about already in the context of your show now. As a young artist, and especially as I got more established in my career, I started realizing that when I would read, or even when I would look at art, but there was something musical about it. When you read a piece of poetry, and I would hear sounds in my head. And then I thought, oh, how lovely that words can be music in their own right, in a way. And it's something that I had pondered for quite a while. And that was a bit of the inspiration point for this project. So it's taking beautiful pieces of poetry, short stories in literature, and reimagining what would this be as musical composition. And for this concert in particular, that's happening in November, I am pulling from several of pieces from my trajectory. One is an excerpt from a chamber opera that I wrote recently, and that chamber opera is called Infinitesimal. And the piece that I'll be performing is called Magnolia Tree. It's a remembrance of this beautiful magnolia tree that was outside my bedroom window in my childhood. And then also there will be a couple allusions to duo extempore, some written works that I had from different projects. One was based on the works of Ray Bradbury. So all of these sort of written and literary connections, a couple that are centered around Robert Frost. There will be some prepared piano, nothing like soundfulness, nothing too crazy, of course, but some really beautiful and unique ways of approaching the instrument. And there will also be a little bit in the way of electronics.
It sounds like that the audience at the upcoming concert that you're going to be doing as part of the Piano in the Arts series is going to be able to experience a wide range of what you do as a pianist.
Yes. So I'm excited to share all of those different parts of myself and who I am as an artist with the people that come. So I really love speaking to my audience and folding them into the experience so they can expect, you know, a bit of that invitation into the performance, and some playing inside the piano, some traditional playing, some electronics, and a little bit of a blend of everything together.
Tonight on Savannah Music Local and Sustainable, I have been talking with pianist Nicole Brancato, who will be performing, as we've described, in a couple of weeks on Thursday, November 13th at 7:30 p.m. as part of the Georgia Southern University Piano in the Arts series at the Fine Arts Auditorium of the Armstrong campus of Georgia Southern University. And I want to thank you so very much, Nicole, for being on the show tonight.
Well, I want to thank you as well. It's been such a treat. Thank you so much, and thank you to everyone listening.
This has been another edition of Music Local and Sustainable, and I've been your host, Dave Link. Save this time for another show next week.
Well, I know we ain't headed for the Hall of Fame. Gonna give it what we got, man, that ain't no shame. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, 1, 2. Let me know if you can hear me. Check, check, 1, 2.